Good evening, everyone. So I was told that I'm supposed to share our story of foster care and adoption, so I don't have a lot of instruction necessarily, maybe some. But I'd like to start out by reading a story tonight. we'll get into more of it. There was an approved set of foster parents and their 2.5-year-old daughter living with the expectation of a phone call from their agency saying that they had a baby for them. That call came to them on January 5, 2010. A little girl named Beautiful Journey was born 2 days earlier on January 3 of 2010. The agency didn't know for sure, they never do, but they thought this little girl's story already pointed in the direction of adoption. It was a sad part of her story, yet the possibility was exciting for the expecting parents. They would be able to pick her up from the hospital the next day. The expectant parents, amid all the excitement, had to do the normal foster care emergency shopping trip. They were required to have a car seat before Beautiful Journey, or BJ as she would later be called, would be released from the hospital. But what else? What else would she need? She'll need food of some sort, right? But what kind? Who knows? After all, they never had a baby this young before. So they browsed the baby section at Walmart, picking out items they think may apply, knowing they'll probably be back again tomorrow. They were indeed able to pick her up the next day, January 6. It was a whirlwind 24 hours or so, and yet the time couldn't quite go fast enough. Finally, they were at the hospital. There were typical forms needed to release a patient from the hospital, which really didn't take that long. However, there wasn't that bureaucracy one might expect, or at least what the new parents expected. It was kind of like, oh, you're here. Change your pamper and you can put a clean outfit on her and we'll get you out of here shortly. The ride home was probably not unlike any biological family heading home with their firstborn. Dad sat a little straighter in the seat, drove a little slower, maybe more careful. Normal bumps felt like landmines. Mom was wondering if they really got her buckled in correctly. Turned out she was an easy baby to care for. Didn't take long until she was sleeping through the night. She had her first visit with her biological mother when she was 2.5 weeks old. There were several more visits before her birth mom faded out of the picture. And for a while appeared like this foster family would be able to adopt their second daughter. But the quiet whispers of a distant relative who was interested in BJ started getting louder. Her name was Janine, and she was currently raising BJ's older brother and had previously raised her mother. October 28, when BJ was nearly 10 months old, foster mom had journaled this. I'm watching my baby girl sleep tonight and prayed for her. God, let her stay in her family. May she serve you with her life and have a relationship with you. And then to BJ, I love you so much, BJ. You are so precious. I'm continually amazed by the person you are, complete, yet so small. A less than pleasant Christmas gift for the foster family in late December was BJ's first visit with Janine. By the early part of 2011, the visits were happening regularly, and the foster family was growing more and more comfortable with Janine. Though they went to different churches, they shared faith in the same Jesus. Jeannie had said before the visit started that her and her mother had been praying for Beautiful Journey and that she would be loved wherever she was. While she liked everyone, BJ was a daddy's girl. Her foster dad was the only daddy she'd ever known, and she adored him. When daddy came home from work, she's all he wanted for a while. It was hard to think of giving up his little girl, yet the court determined that Janine would be getting full custody of Beautiful Journey. Visits increased in frequency and progressed to overnight stays. Finally, a date was set for the official move. On the night before the move, their last night with BJ as part of their family, they went to a park. It was a beautiful evening. They walked the wide path that followed a creek. They watched ducks and geese. They whispered dreams for her in their ears. They told her Jesus loved her. They prayed for her. They explained that she was going to live with Janine. And in some sort of unexplainable way, it felt to them that BJ, though he was only 16 months old, somehow understood what was going on. How much she understood will probably never be known. The next day, which was in May of 2011, they took BJ and her belongings to her new home. Foster mom just told herself it was another visit so she could keep herself together until they left. They were able to visit her several times after she moved before communication was cut off. BJ, they were told, would often wait by the front door after they left, waiting for her family to come back for her. And although they haven't had contact with her since then, they have received a picture of her from a social worker several years after she moved. And for those of you who don't know, I was that dad. And that was my little girl. So I'm going to backtrack now and go into, just talk a little bit more about our story, what got us there. By the way, my name is Shannon Martin. My wife Norma is sitting back there, assuming a lot of you know us. We live in Philadelphia, and we currently have three children, and we'll talk more about that as we go along. But several years into our marriage, Norma and I didn't have children. It wasn't our plan. And it wasn't that we were worried about it. Felt like there was a lot of future ahead of us. There was, of course, people that had lots of advice. Well, if you can't have children, you can always adopt, which always felt kind of insensitive. And while we were disappointed that we were having biological children, it offered a new set of opportunities. And so I guess for me, I'm speaking more for me than for my wife. I don't know if she would agree with this, but I was kind of okay with part of it. There was, new opportunities, and I didn't feel like I had to have children to make me validate me. I was okay. It wasn't something that I felt was I had to have. And I wasn't interested at all in adopting children. I think I had a poor view of adoption, and I think I'm growing in that. But over time, Norm and I started feeling like maybe God was calling us toward adoption. Maybe He had a plan for us. And in 2007, Norm and I went to SMBI for a couple of terms. And one of the classes we took was called Christian Morality. It was taught by Cliff Schrock. Really enjoyed the class. And part of one of our assignments for the term in that class was a research project. And there was a lot of options you could choose from, a whole list of stuff. And it was about taking an issue, doing some research, and making a choice, make a decision about it. So it might have been something on divorce and remarriage. It might have been somewhat that is not necessarily, there's things that there's controversy about in Christian world. And one of them was interracial adoption. And so we weren't totally sure where God was calling us, but we had a lot of questions. And so some of our questions, what about transracial adoption? What about bringing somebody from another culture into our own culture? What about their future? How does it affect them 15 years from now? Is it ever right to put them into just kind of thrust into a different culture? A lot of different questions, and so we decided to do this, and Cliff was gracious in allowing us to work on the project together. And so we spent a lot of time going through the Bible. I'm going to share a couple things that stuck out to us. A couple of verses, Deuteronomy 10:17, and I was amazed at the amount of verses that in the Old Testament, even in the New Testament, but the amount of verses that God had directed toward the orphan, the fatherless, a lot of them include the widow, but we were looking at the fatherless and the orphan, and it's over and over again. I think it's, it was spoken of over 60 times throughout the Bible. Deuteronomy 10, verses 17 to 19 says, "For the Lord your God is God of gods and Lord of lords, a great God, a mighty, a terrible, which regardeth not persons, nor taketh reward. He doth execute judgment of the fatherless and loveth the stranger in giving him food and raiment. Love ye therefore the stranger, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt." James 1:27 talks about pure religion and undefiled before God and the fathers this, to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction. There was somebody had mentioned in adoption, if you adopt, you're inviting interruptions. And I love C.S. Lewis' quote. He said, "There's no such thing as an interruption in life. There's only the real life God brings you day by day." And I think sometimes, we kind of forget that there may be interruptions in my plan, but really it's life as God planned it. It's nothing surprising to him. Psalm 68, 5 and 6, "A father of the fatherless and a judge of the widows is God in his holy habitation. God setteth the solitary in families, he bringeth out those which are bound with change, but the rebellious dwell in a dry land." I also want to read Ephesians 1, 3 to 5, and I'd like to read that in the ESV version. Ephesians 1, 3 to 5, "Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who has blessed us in Christ with every spiritual blessing in the heavenly places, even as he chose us in him before the foundation of the world that we should be holy and blameless before him. In love, he predestined us for adoption to himself as sons through Jesus Christ, according to the purpose of his will." And I think it might have been Dennis Rainey that said it, but he said, adoption is the normal Christian life. Is it not the physical gospel? And that really stuck out to me. Adoption is a physical gospel. It literally happens. And I think it's such a good picture of how God takes us in. Another thing that stuck out to me in his book, Under the Influence, Alvin Schmidt said it was well documented that early Christians were known to take in orphans. Adoption they're very pro-adoption. You can look through there, and there's tons of verses, just a couple excerpts there. And I think the biggest takeaway for Norma and I as we went through that is that more important than the race thing, even though it is important, and I think it's something that you can work through, need to talk through. And for our situation, where our setting is, it was as big of an issue. And for us, it was very strongly that God was saying that adoption in particular, taking care of followers, it was on his heart. It's just part of who God is. And that came so clear to us that he was calling us into adoption. So I think more than any revelation on interracial adoption, any of that, the bigger thing that stuck out to us was God's call to us, that it was really what he had in mind for our lives. So after returning from SNBI, we started to pursue adoption. We started to do it through foster care. And because of our schedule, it took us about 2 years till we were actually completed the training, got all the background checks to become approved as foster parents. And we hadn't actually been approved. We got a call around 4:30 in the afternoon, May 14, 2009. And the agency was calling to tell us that we were actually approved, which we were expecting. So that felt really good. And they said on the same phone call, "We have a placement for you." Whoa, okay. So that was kind of shocking. We were looking for a young baby. They said it was a 2-year-old, very little info. Her name was Grace, and that she walked with a gait, had a little hitch in her walk. And that's all we knew. And we're like, "Well, how long do we have to decide?" And they said, that kind of took them off. They're like, "Well, I guess 10 minutes. They wanted an answer. So Norm and I were like, "Well, what do we do? Should we pray about this?" Or, and I was like, "Well, we've been praying about this for years. Of course, that's what we want." So we said yes. And what do you do? We hadn't been approved. We hadn't gotten anything ready. She was being removed as an emergency placement. She was removed from another foster home because of some abuse allegations in that home against another child. And because of these allegations, she would have to have a physical exam before she could be placed with us. So we were to meet Grace and a social worker at CHOP, Children's Hospital there in Philly, at 9 o'clock that night. So we got there, and I think we met her pretty close to 9 o'clock. And for us, it was love at first sight. I mean, I don't know, it was so much reciprocated by Grace we were totally strangers. This is something we'd been preparing for all our life. And so she wanted nothing to do with us. And it turns out she was 21 months old. So she's a little bit younger than what they told us. And yeah, just very cute. And the night was a long night. We ended up spending most of the night in the emergency room. It was a number of hours till they even called her back. And tried to get to know her a little bit, tried to hold her. We could, a little bit, if you distract her, she'd let me hold her a little bit and I'd go show her something. But it was a long night. And mostly she clung to her social worker, which social worker's like, she never saw me that often, a couple of times, but it was all she had. She was taken from her familiar surroundings and just totally, I mean, she was worried. She couldn't sleep. And I'll read a little excerpt from an email I sent out shortly after we brought her home. We were officially checked out of the hospital at 4:15 this morning, and we were unloading the car at home when my phone alarm went off for the time I was getting up that week, which was 4:45. I still had to put the crib together, so it was close to 6:00 in the morning till we crawled into bed. Grace only slept for about 3 minutes in the hospital, so she fell asleep on the ride home, which may have helped her transition to our house. She woke up around 8:00. Welcome to the world of parenting, right? So that was kind of our introduction. And kind of a blessing in disguise was that where I was working at the time, things had gotten really slow, and they cut us down to a four-day work week. And it just happened that was a Friday that I didn't have to work. So it worked out really good as we'd get a little sleep throughout the day. But she was born in August 8th of 2007, which means that Grace's mom was pregnant with her while we were studying at SMBI. So it was pretty neat how God was putting some of this stuff together while we didn't know. God was going before us. And so we know very little about her life before she came. I don't think we have any pictures of her before she came to us. A little bit of stuff we could figure out. She knew relatively little words. We had no correspondence with other family. And so didn't talk a couple words. She did surprise us at camp, though, a couple months later. We were helping with a camp at Camp Andrews, and we were ready to have a meal. Dan East, some of you may know him, was trying to get everybody calmed down. It was kind of rowdy. Nobody was ready to calm down. And she kind of got this exasperated little look on her face, like, shut up! And it's just this little two-year-old, but she had it pretty loud, never knew she said it. But it was quite fitting. We think she maybe had a dog where they lived before, because if she had food she didn't want or she was full, she'd make a little drop her food on the floor. I think she said a word we could never figure it out. We kind of assumed was maybe the dog's name, but we could never figure it out. She's an unusual story in the foster care world. We had her in our house 6 weeks before we knew we'd be able to adopt her. TPR had happened, parental rights had been terminated not long before that. And so when it became apparent that she wouldn't be able to stay at that other home, we were next up. And less than 8 months from the day we brought her home, we had the adoption. Again, just never moves that fast, right? In fact, our agency told us that they use our story sometimes to tell people that it's not always the way you hear it. So very unusual. This was our first placement, and there's just a lot going on. So she was adopted in January, and BJ, the story I started out with, came was placed with us on January 6th. So she was 3 days old. Grace was adopted the next day, January 7th. And January 8th, the next day, Quamaine moved in with us. So a lot of stuff going on in that week. And kind of tying stories together a little bit here, with Grace was attached to BJ as much as we were. I didn't mention her in the previous story very much. And When we left DJ with her new home, we got in the car, Gracie cried. It was, it was a big part of her, a big loss for her as well. Just looking back over some of the journals, Grace noted that Grace could make BJ laugh when she was only 3 months old. BJ was only 3 months old, and Grace had a way with entertaining her. And Grace is 10 now, and just feels like she's always been a part of her family. She just finished fourth grade. She enjoys reading. She likes music. She plays violin and piano. And she helps out a lot around the house. She actually likes outdoor stuff as well. And tremendous blessing to her house and to our family. Can't imagine, life without her. Then, so Grace was adopted. My date's mixed up here. It was 2010. And so then 9 months after BJ had left, we had another temporary placement. It was a brother-sister. Hanif was 5 and his sister was 5 months old. And they asked us if we'd take him on a temporary basis. We'd opened our home up again to another placement. So we said we agreed to take them if it didn't affect us getting a more permanent placement, because that's what we were interested in at that point. And said, yeah, that's fine. And so we were going to take them. I can't quite remember, but I don't think Hanif had ever been to the country, and his little sister and Norma's family's from New York, and we wanted to do a visit up there. We're telling him about the cows and farms, and he was all excited about going. So April 5, it's like a Thursday evening. I don't remember Easter weekend. We had a long weekend. We were going up, heading out the lovely expressway out of Philly there. And we got a call from our foster agency saying, hey, we have a three-week-old baby boy. Do you want him? He's in the hospital. They're like, well, like, if he's been in there 3 weeks, can you wait till the weekend? They were, nope, he's being discharged tonight. You got to come tonight. So thank you, DHS. You know, it's like sometimes it's emergency, but you can plan sometimes, right? Not this time. We turned around. We canceled the trip, came home, and that night we had Cameron came to be with us. He was born on March 15, and he arrived on April 5. He was 3 weeks old, and he weighed 4 pounds, 6 ounces. His weight at birth was 3 pounds, 6 ounces. And he'd been in the hospital 3 weeks because he was a preemie. He was 8 weeks premature. And I just remember holding him. I could hold his head and torso would pretty much fit on my hand. His feet would come down partway. Just a little guy. And I just remember, like, changing his pamper the first time. I was like, man, there's nothing there. I was like, sure he's going to break something. Yeah, it wasn't my first time changing pampers. Yeah. So anyhow, but he did really well. It was a busy time for us. So with the two, we had Hanif was 5, Grace 4, Madison was 4 months, and then Cameron was 3 weeks. So we didn't have the exact time down, but I think they had been there for 4 months total, Hanif and Madison, so maybe overlapped for 6 or 8 weeks. Cameron, he was an easy baby and slept a lot, slept all the time, and had several visits with his mom, and we're grateful that we have a picture of him with his mom. She was holding him at a visit. For maybe 5 months old, Cameron was diagnosed with asthma, but otherwise very healthy, and actually seems to be outgrowing it now. We haven't used an inhaler for a couple of years. And we were able to adopt Cameron on April 2nd of 2014, when he was just a little over 2 years old. And at the adoption, we had a time range. It didn't give us an exact appointment to see the judge. So we're in the waiting room with all these people. We had family there. And I'm not sure when we go in. And finally, you know, they tell us, hey, well, you know, we think you're up next. Just depends on how long this other case takes. And so Cam was getting really sleepy. So I left him fall asleep. And figured a little bit of rest might not hurt. Well, he fell into deep sleep, and we couldn't wake him up. Couldn't get him up. He just flopped. Everyone just tried to lay him down. So for his entire ceremony there in front of the judge, he was knocked out. We were able to get, I think we woke him up for a picture with the judge. Maybe afterward he finally woke up, but he was out. And Yeah. Now he's 6 years old, just finished kindergarten, very athletic, loves sports, anything with a ball or action, he's loving that. He's really started to enjoy art at kindergarten, he's doing pretty well at it. I was going over to some of the parts of the story I'm sharing with the children, and Cameron wanted me to add this. He said that when he's out jumping on the trampoline and mom calls him in to do a chore, he'll come in and do the chore, and he likes to sneak back out to the trampoline. She doesn't think she knows that he does it. So he wanted me to make sure he knew that. We had closed our home for placements for a while, and then in July of last year, we had Samir placed with us, and he's sitting back there with Norma now. He was born on May 3. He also was a preemie. He was born 10 weeks early. He weighed 3 pounds, 1 ounce when he was born, but he didn't come to our house until about 2 months later on July 6, and he was, I think, maybe 6 pounds or something, maybe 7 pounds, so it wasn't a small when we got him. But kind of like Gracie, he was in another foster home for about a month, we think. We're not quite sure. We're not sure how long he was in the hospital. But he was removed from that foster home for concerns of some sort, not proper care. It wasn't necessarily abuse, but just didn't feel like he was being cared for properly. And he's 13 months old now. He just had his birthday in the beginning of May. And he's still with us, obviously. And we don't know his future. Not sure where his story goes. At the end of the year, we thought things were looking like we may be able to adopt him. In December, our agency went to his normal court hearing, and they were planning to ask for his goal to be changed to adoption. And his birth dad showed up. He had gone AWOL for a couple of months. Nobody could get a hold of him, no contact. Showed up at court. And then this past March, he was confirmed as the actual father. And so he's interested in now. He's coming to the visits. He says he wants to take care of him. So the timing of this here tonight is actually really good for me. I was digging back in our journal and looking back at God's call in my life. And so it's actually been really helpful for me as we look at possibly letting go of Samir. Don't know what that'll look like. And I forgot if I mentioned this. His next court date is on Wednesday. It's coming Wednesday. So you're welcome to pray with us that, yeah, God's will be done on that. Don't know where that's leading. Christy Irwin is a foster mom, and she tells a story about Kiki. And she found out about Kiki through her social worker. I don't think it was intended. She somehow mentioned in passing. And so she asked about her. She wasn't quite 2 years old. I'm not even sure how long ago this was, but she was laying in a hospital in a coma as a result of child abuse. She had no family, and so Christy said, well, I gotta go see her. She had many different foster children through her home, and they ended up, no family, so she went in. She had some friends that helped her. They took turns sitting with her, having somebody by her bedside. I don't know if it was all the time, but a lot of the time. And they were there for the test for Kiki's ability to live without life support, which failed. They were there when she died. They planned a funeral for her, and they raised money for her tombstone. And that story just kind of reminded me why I'm willing to invest my life, my love for foster children. I find a lot of fulfillment and knowing that we gave BJ a good, stable environment for 16 months of her life. And that first year, you know, is extremely critical for development. There's a lot of things that can really hinder their development and how they'll respond in adulthood in that first year. So, I guess I look at that as... maybe she could have had a story similar to Kiki if we hadn't been there. And yeah, we do get attached to these babies, but it's exactly what they need. they need that attachment. If they don't have somebody attached to, people say, I couldn't help but get attached. Well, most people can't help but get attached to it, but then that's why they need it. They need that attachment. They need the interaction to grow. I really love to adopt Samir. And be really hard letting him go. And yet it's not about me, right? There's a bigger story that I'm a part of. God's heart is for the orphan. And today there's around 400,000 children and youth in foster care, in the foster care system in the U.S. And there's about 100,000 of them that have had their parental rights terminated or waiting for forever families. And probably, I would guess, a lot of those are older. And I believe it's around 20,000 that age out of the foster care system every year. And their statistics aren't good. I don't know them, I don't have them written down, but the statistics of somebody aging out of the foster system is pretty bad. Homelessness, drug use, etc. There's no family to go to, nobody to fall back on. And so I guess I say that to say that find a way that you can help the fatherless, the orphan. I don't know. I mean, there's not everybody can go to Mexico like Jason and Jamie, right? Nobody can do what Roger did. And I think sometimes we think of orphan as it's somebody else, but there's orphans all around us. And maybe it's not your call to foster or adopt, but maybe there's a way you can support that. So I would challenge you with that. But I was thinking about this when Kwai asked if I'd share our story, and like, what's the point of a story? Why tell our story? Stories impact us, right? The Bible's stories. It's a big story with lots of little stories in between it. And so you have a story too, right? God's writing your story. There's a lot of things happening, and sometimes we don't like our stories. And like even tonight sharing, you know, it's somewhat vulnerable to share our story. And yet, I guess I'm going to leave you with some encouragement here tonight yet. You can turn to 1 Corinthians 9 if you would, if you have your Bibles. And I just want to look at Paul's comparison of life as a race. First Corinthians 9, 24 to 27. Know you not that they which run in a race run all, but one receiveth the prize? So run that you may obtain. And every man that striveth for the mastery is tempered in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. I therefore so run, not as uncertainly, so fight I, not as one that beateth the air, but I keep under my body and bring it into subjection, lest that by any means, when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway. I'd like to read a story out of Rick Rhodes' book, Run to Win. And maybe you guys are familiar with the book. I don't know how many of you have read it. But Rick writes, my son Ramon was running in the 800 meter finals at the 2014 International Student Convention during his freshman year. In the preliminary heats 2 days before, I knew that he had run hard to qualify, but we both knew he could have run harder. Ramon had said that he could have pushed himself more, but he didn't want to run out of strength before the finish line. The 800 meter is not a sprint, so you have to pace yourself in order to finish the race well. When the big day came, he lined up at the starting line. He was clearly one of the youngest and smallest runners in the race, as most were juniors and seniors. To win a medal meant that he would need to run with all the strength he could possibly muster. Even then, his best still might not earn him the medal as one of the top six. Earn him a medal as one of the top six. The two of us had agreed that he would need to push himself more at the beginning of the race to keep the lead runners within reach. In his preliminary race, Ramon had paced himself, but he had not set his pace fast enough from the start. That's why he still had leftover energy at the end of the race. So we had planned that he would run faster from the start of the race and then hope to pick up the pace even more on the final lap. The starting gun blasted and the runners were off, whereupon I sat down in the stands to relax and enjoy a good race. Yeah, right. I was on the field in the coaches section, screaming and cheering. I couldn't sit or even stand still. This was it, the finals. My son was running for a medal, and I was determined to do everything I could to help him run his best. I wasn't the only one cheering him on. He had lots of friends and supporters in the stands letting him know they were there. That's the great part about track and field events. The action is fast, the atmosphere is intense, and fans are not hesitant about screaming their support to the runners on the track. The first lap went well. Ramont was keeping pace with the group of the lead runners. And I had lost 5 pounds jumping up and down and screaming for him to keep going. By this time, everyone around me knew my son's name and that I was his dad. Ramont began his final lap of the 800-meter run with an increased pace and a resolute look on his face. He was giving it everything he had, determined not to be turned away from winning a medal. My response? Still yelling, myself hoarse, urging Ramont to do his best and not to let up. Ramon finished strong, earning his first ISC medal with a 6th-place finish in the 800-meter run. There was no doubt in my mind that Ramon had given it everything he had. He had run the finals in his best time ever, a good 8 seconds faster than in his preliminary. 30 minutes later, Ramon vomited, and confirming that he indeed pushed himself really hard. No disappointment that he hadn't finished first. He had run his fastest and had done his best. Our family believes that when you do your absolute best and have the right attitude, you are a winner, no matter what place you earn. Ramon's best was a 6th-place finish, and we celebrated his win. And I'd just like to think about your life a little bit, and what are maybe some of the hard things? What is something that you're facing that maybe you're tempted to mail it in or give up on? Hebrews 12:1 says this, "Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus." And this comes right after the faith chapter, okay? And it lists all the people in there, Abel, Abraham, Sarah, Jacob, Joseph, whole list, Samuel, David, people that I think is this cloud of witnesses. And back in February this year when the Super Bowl was happening, there was expected to be 100 million viewers, and there's probably somewhere around 60,000 people watching in the actual stadium. And I don't know the ratio, but I do know a lot that there's a lot of former players that actually get to go to the Super Bowl. It almost becomes a reunion of sorts for some of them. But they're in the crowd watching and cheering. And if you were a player, do you think it would have more effect to you if there was Peyton Manning, who's been there, he's got the MVP trophy, versus Joe Schmo cheering for you? When there's somebody up there that's been there, somebody that's up there that set a standard, you don't want to mail it in, right? You don't want to play half-hearted. You want to prove that you belong there too. And yeah, you try to play to that standard. And I think that's what this passage here is to us. Okay, there's people that have gone before us. Okay, there's people that seem unreachable. But, I mean, Kirvin, Jacob in the Bible, he was a farmer, right? And he kind of got the wrong end of the deal, right? You maybe notice how some of your past experience has been, right? But imagine, he can probably relate to, imagine he's up in the stands, and you're tempted to give it up. And I'm using this in relation to farming, but it's life. And he's saying, run, Kirvin, run. Don't give up. Run. Keep going, right? And I don't know, Zach, you taught school this year. Maybe you're all relaxed now. But there's probably days where you feel like giving up or you didn't feel like treating somebody with respect or whatever. Imagine Joseph in the stands, and he's saying, go, you can do it. He's been through tough stuff, right? Tremendous stuff. And he's saying, run, Zach, run. Moms, a lot of you here are moms. I saw a lot of, Grace pointed out, all the baby seats lined up in the back there. And, you know, you're trying to get work done. You've got three people grabbing at your ankles. You only got two, right? Maybe Sarah's up there in the grandstand saying, run! Maybe that's a bad analogy, but you get the point. Don't give in when it's tough, okay? Keep the end in mind. Keep running. I don't know, Lester, you're studying for a sermon or you got a meeting to lead that you really don't want to, or it's a tough meeting. And you're like, is it really, really worth it? Is it really worth it? And I don't know, picture David. He's had a lot of times where he felt like giving up, right? Saying, run, Lester, run! You can do this. Don't give in. Don't hang it up. And I guess that's what I want to let you with tonight. And again, I hope that part of our story can just say, don't give in when things don't feel nice, when things feel easy. Run, run. There's a race for you to run. There's a race for you to run. Run it well. That's all I have. There's a couple of minutes. Does anybody have any questions or anything you want to share? Give you a couple of minutes so you can, if you have any questions about our story, you're welcome to. Fire away. All right, well, why don't we stand for prayer then? Roger said we can have prayer, and I'll just dismiss you after this. And Father God, we're grateful for the stories you've placed in the Bible. We're grateful for the stories that are all around us. And we're grateful, Lord, most of all, that you're writing our story. And we want to trust that the last chapter is a good one. And we want to trust that you bring all these things together for good. And that even though things come against us meant for evil, you can take that and make it good. Help us to run, Lord. Help us to run with patience. Help us to run with perseverance, to not give in, to not give up, but to keep on running. Thank you for your Spirit, which encourages us, and we ask you to go with us tonight. In Jesus' name, amen.